What is up, internet? Welcome to another episode of the Team Ability No Excuses podcast, bringing real talk to matters of disability with no excuses. Andy, Brett, Chad, ready to talk to you tonight. And Brett, you're the star of the show tonight. It's going to happen. I'm saying tonight because we're taping tonight. I don't know when you're listening. Maybe you're listening at 8:52 in the morning and the word tonight sounds foreign to you, so I'm sorry, but I don't know what it is about 8:52 either that just jumped in my head. But anyways, Brett, you're the star of the show, so hope you're ready to talk tonight.
I'm always the star of the show. Let's get rolling.
Hey, Roland, you made a wheelchair joke. All right.
Oh, that wasn't even deliberate. Wow.
You're just ready to go. You're so on fire today that you're making jokes without even intending. By the way, Andy is here. Say hi, Andy.
What's up?
What's up? What's up?
What's up?
Andy's sounding exhausted. You're done riding your bike. Well, you're not done. You're done the session. Were you out on your bike today?
No, Steve's on holiday, so I've been stationary biking it because without a spotter, odds are pretty high I'm going to fall over. So
Yeah. You should have just bought a tandem bike and you guys could just go together.
No,
I'm not. I guess it's kind of hard to look cool when you're on a tandem bike with your little brother and you're not seven.
Well, yeah, if we're going to go tandem, why not just go back to the workman cycle?
Great point. You did work really friggin' hard to learn how to ride a two-wheel bike, so I guess tandem is out of the question.
Chad, I think you and I should be buying a tandem hand cycle.
Can we just listen? Tandem hand cycle? Can we just let's put something out there for the internet? Let's figure out a mobility company that can figure out a tether system. We'll just tether our two wheelchairs together so that, you know, we could take shifts, you know, pushing the chair.
That sounds so dangerous. I like it.
All right, excellent. I was going to say dangerous, but enticing. Yeah.
I think it would be less productive for you too, because you would just be like, "Yo, it's your turn. Stop being so lazy."
Well, listen, Andy, you're the personal trainer. It would be like HIIT training, high intensity interval training, where we would go like, you know, a minute on and then a minute off, except in the off section, the other guy pushes the chair. It writes itself, well, man.
No, I mean, theoretically, it makes sense, but... I think Brett is in for a lot more work if that's the case.
I was just going to say the opposite. I think Chad's going to get jacked.
I mean, I would ask which one of us is fatter, but I think the answer would be me. So
No. I'm 185 pounds, and I don't even care with the internet.
You're not 185 pounds.
I swear to God, I'm 185 pounds.
Okay, so you've got me beat. Definitely. I think I've told the story. We're getting to the point, guys, 20 some episodes in mid. I think this we're hitting mid 20s now with this one. And we're getting to the point that I can't remember what stories I've told. But I think I told the story where I had to weigh myself on a Go Train luggage scale to figure out how much I actually weighed. So that's accurate, Brett.
Yeah. Does Go Train even have a luggage scale?
Not on the train at the station. They did.
Go Train.
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah. Aldershot.
Oh, okay.
Why did you have to weigh yourself at the train station?
Oh, I did it. Okay, so let me explain that let me back up a little bit. The reason that I did it was I have, and Andy can attest to this from the multiple times I have tried and failed at working out with him, counting calories, watching my weight and such. I've tried many times to accurately weigh myself, and I can't really do it because I don't have a way of standing properly on a scale. So I finally found this big luggage scale at the Aldershot Go station. And so I decided, first of all, it was my idea to weigh my wheelchair. I don't know why, because I realized it was big enough to put my wheelchair on. So I got out of the chair and weighed the chair. And then I was like, wait a minute, I could actually just sit on this thing in like as a, you know, big piece of human flesh and just weigh my entire self. So that's what I did. And I'm happy to admit, Brett, that I am not 180 whatever pounds you said you were.
185.
So I mean, if muscle weighs more than fat, which I 100% believe to be true, does that mean you got to get more jacked, Andy, if that is Brett's true weight?
Can we walk that out for a minute?
Yeah, sure. Go ahead, make me feel stupid. I am on summer vacation after all.
Okay, so how much is a pound of sand?
A pound.
How much is a pound of feathers?
A pound.
So how does a pound of fat weigh less than a pound of muscle?
The answer, Andy, is calisthenics.
Incorrect.
That was just a big bodybuilding word or kinesiology word I tried to use. I have no idea what it means.
So your body is leaner when you have muscle and not fat, but if you weigh 185, it doesn't matter if you weigh 185 fat or 185 muscle.
Yeah, you've done the job. I now feel stupid. Excellent. Fantastic. All right, so if you've been listening for a while, you certainly know that Brett is now a part of the team, and we've realized that although Brett was on our show at about episode, early on, the first time we had Brett on, and please do go back and check that out. You can check out all the old episodes on whatever podcatching device you're using. The first time we had Brett on, he told the story of some of the obstacles that he's had to overcome and losing his father and the mountains that he's had to climb surrounding that. But we haven't done something that we have done for Andy and I, and that's kind of a day in our what a typical day looks like for us and just sort of getting to know us more on a personal level. So I hope, dear Brett, that you are ready to talk about yourself in absolute transparent fashion tonight. Yes?
Sure.
Sure, he says. Okay, so I want to get it out there right away. You have you told us by group chat, we've got a little group chat where we talk about podcast ideas, and you said you've had a day or a week or things have been going not so great. So you want to give us a glimpse into what's grinding your gears this evening?
I can't even really pinpoint exactly what's going on. Work's a joke right now. Just people not showing up for shifts and things going wrong. I worked for a food manufacturing company that I will remain unnamed, but in the 4.5 years that I've been here or been there, the CFIA has never had to be called for an incident. And this week we had to call the CFIA.
Can I wager a guess that the CFIA is the Canadian Food Investigation Agency?
The inspection agency.
Oh, yes. I was close.
Yeah. We had some rubber from our blenders go into our blends, and there was like 40 or 50 2,000-pound sacks, and they had already been shipped out.
Awesome. That's why your employer will remain unnamed, I suppose. All right, so I want to back up and instantly congratulate you on something that you said earlier, and that is that you're working, because, you know, as we've talked about before, there are quite a few members, and I mean no disrespect, although we tend to not make any excuses on the No Excuses podcast, there are quite a few of members of the disabled community that are quite content, or at least seem quite content to the outside looking in, to sit and not work. So congratulations, Brett Wills, for being gainfully employed in your nameless food factory company place.
Thank you. I don't think I deserve any congratulations, but it's only because, and I know that people that are listening can relate to this. There was a period of time that I went through with anxiety and depression, and then that manifested into physical health issues. And it was a period of a good 10 years before I pulled my head out of my ass and decided that it was that enough was enough, and I took a leap of faith out of my wheelchair and went to go find a job.
I have to, first of all, thank you for being so transparent and honest, and you have talked about battles with anxiety and depression that have led to physical ailments and such. And so what was the catalyst? What was the moment where you said, you know, enough is enough, I'm getting my ass in gear?
I think there was a transition in time where everybody that has listened to this podcast, I think, knows that I still live at home with my mom. And that's out of necessity and out of want. Mm. I love my mom tremendously. She's a widow, as we've discussed. My dad did pass. And I don't know. I, 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 I strongly feel that if I wasn't living here at home with my mom, that I wouldn't be living at all.
Wow.
And I know, Chad, that we've discussed that you live right next door to your parents.
Yep.
God bless them. They put up with a lot having you live 20 feet away from them. But the relationship with my mom has gotten so much better since my dad passed away.
Wow. This is the No Excuses podcast. So what would Brett Wills, the man, say to those that are making excuses for as to why they can't?
You are capable of so much more than you think you are. It's that simple.
Self-doubt's a bitch, isn't it?
It really is that simple. If you look at yourself in the mirror and you've got self-loathing or hatred in the way you look at yourself, stop, because you are capable of so much more than what you are doing today.
I know a little bit of your story just because of the fact that we started doing this podcast, and it was Chad's idea to have you on initially, and then I said, yeah, let's go, let's look at that, and that was really the start, obviously, that evolved into this, but everything you've overcome is incredible, first of all. But I wanted to talk about, as Chad said, everybody can kind of do something, and you just repeated that as well. You didn't go get a desk job. You didn't. You're not hiding behind your computer and a monitor. At least not while you're working, but
that's the funny thing, though, Andy. When I first got back into the workforce, after my dad died, I was behind a desk for 2.5 years. Then I shattered my femur, and then developed a pressure sore. And in 2009, and then I ended up getting my act together, I guess, in 2016.
Okay, well, what does getting your act together mean? Like, this is what I want to kind of unwrap, because it's absolutely right. There's a lot of things that a lot of people can do, and you're capable of more than you think you are. But you I guess what I'm trying to say is, you didn't go get a typical wheelchair job for, I don't know how to say it, but
that's a great way to say it. I love that, Andy. That was on the tip of my tongue, because you know that's what people think, you know, one of those safe, you know, wheelchair jobs. And just to sort of pick up on what Andy was saying, like, you could have, you know, I don't know the type of sort of desk job that you were doing, but it's decently easy to find those work from home sort of situations where you could have just stayed at home. And we had lost touch a little bit, Brett, since both, you know, for myself, since stopped playing hockey, and we sort of would only talk over social media. And so to find out that you were in the situation, the job situation that you were in, the type of work that you were doing, I was surprised too, because it's, you know, it's, there's a lot, I don't want to say safer in the safety sense, but easier things probably that you could have been doing.
It was a lot more comfortable jobs.
Yeah, no, you're both absolutely right. I've been watching junior level hockey since I was 14 or 15 years of age. And I realized shortly after I started watching it that in order to own a team, you needed a little bit of money. And typically in Ontario, and it's a discussion for a different day, but typically in Ontario, a lot of dads own teams so their sons can play. And when I learned this, I started to get to know owners and whatnot. And I guess in 2004, I started to get to know this owner of the hockey team in Oakville. And it took me till 2006 to kind of just, I guess I was shooting the breeze with him one night in the bar. We were having a couple of drinks and he looked over at me and asked me if I wanted a drink. And I told him, yeah. But we got to talking and he literally asked me what my life story, like we've been discussing for the last, I don't know how many weeks, 20 or so. And I told him what was going on. And I asked him what he did for a living one night or during this conversation. And he said, well, I do this. If you want a tour of the facility, just come on by and I'll give you a tour of the facility. So we scheduled a date. And that morning I put on a tie and went over to his facility. I had printed off a resume that looked like absolute garbage, by the way. And took a tour of his facility and got back to his office. And he said, quote, tell me why you're really here, question mark, end quote. And before he actually got the entire question out of his mouth, I started grinning like a stupid Cheshire cat because I think he knew that I needed a job. But anyway, we got to talking and he told me that he couldn't promise me anything and he would hand my resume off to HR. And I got a phone call 3 weeks later asking me to come in for an interview. And 10 days after the interview, I got a phone call from somebody there and they had offered me a job. And I'm going to tell you, gentlemen, that I'm still doing that job today. It's not very glamorous. I work 40 hours one week and I work 4 days a week the next. But in my opinion, a job is a job. And I feel much better about myself knowing that that I'm doing something with myself because I'm fully capable of doing something.
So you have this hockey owner that you chum around with for a little while and you get this job. So what does your, when you're working your 40 hour week, what does that look like for you?
Well, it's now varied. I wake up, have a shower, walk out the door. I'm 20 minutes to work. I work 8 to 4:30 with 2 15-minute breaks and a 30-minute lunch. But I'm labeling bags for a living, and it's fine. Like I don't go to work necessarily to enjoy my day. I go to work because, first of all, like I keep reiterating, I feel like I'm a productive member of society. I'm working not because I have to, but because I want to. I could easily, like we've been saying, I could easily stay at home and collect whatever, ODSP or some sort of government pension. That wouldn't be a problem. But I want to feel like I'm a productive member of society.
Yeah. And to that end, just to sort of piggyback on Andy's thoughts, you're not there, at least I don't think you're there, because of your chair. You're there because of Brett Wills, the human, the man, not Brett Wills, who, you know, the charity case, for lack of a better word.
They told me right away. They said, we don't know if we have a spot for you. We'll let you know. And they came back to me and they said that I'm filling a need. And now that I look back at it 4.5 years later, I definitely filled a need. And I'm definitely filling a need daily because, in my opinion, without what I'm doing for them, their production, it goes slower.
Right. So yeah, I guess that's what I'm trying to get to. They didn't create a job to fill their employment rate for persons with disability, right? Like you are a member of a team, you're doing meaningful work every day. Like
I'm filling a need that they felt they needed to fill, right. But they didn't realize they were needing to fill it at the time.
I get you.
If that makes sense.
So along those lines, are there any modifications for your job that you like would be different from Joe Blow, the able-bodied factory worker?
Well, they cut down a table for me. The legs of the table were for a standing desk, and they cut it down to sitting height. That's basically it.
Yeah.
Yeah, the processes that are in place now weren't necessarily created for me. The processes that are in place now that help my job out tremendously are in place because it would help Joe Blow off the street do his job if he had an opportunity to slide in next to me or slide in to replace me.
Right.
To be perfectly honest with you, at some point, my job is going to become obsolete. The tasks that I'm doing currently, as of whatever day today is, will be obsolete, I would suspect, by the new year.
Oh, wow.
And you know what? Part of me is like, oh, wow, holy shit. Because I kind of feel like I'm going to be out without a job. But part of me is like, that's awesome because I bust my ass every day and I'm physically not able to function some days because the job has literally kicked my ass.
Right.
So any trepidation I have about it is just like, well, you know what? They'll find something else for me. Because they can't necessarily fire me because they don't have something for me to do.
I'm going to jump in there just for the benefit of our listeners, maybe that haven't gone back and listened to your sort of initial visit on the show when you talked about some of your struggles with pain. So it's sort of just to jump in, just to sort of tell the backstory there. What kind of physical issues? I mean, we know obviously the spina bifida, and, you know, the disability, but the pain issues that you're dealing with, and maybe what is adding to that at your workplace?
Well, I've been very candid and open and honest about the fact that I slipped and fell and broke my femur trying to transfer from my car to my wheelchair one winter's night because I'm an asshole and I was supposed to go home for dinner, but I decided to go have a beer with a buddy of mine after a hockey game. I'm 99% certain that it's got the pain has to do with the hardware that's in my body, in my hip and in my knee because of the femur repair. And I don't mean to throw anybody under the bus, but when an occupational therapist fits you for a wheelchair, in my opinion, since I've only been using a wheelchair steady since I was 19, I feel like they need to fill a quota in order to make enough money. So they just say, yep, you're good this way, this way, this way, this way, this way, without even actually listening to their patient.
Wow. So you feel you were improperly fitted for equipment then, and they have further complications because of that.
Huh. Correct.
All right. So jumping back to the workplace and your duties as sticker bitch, your words, not mine. Is it just the grind of working a full-time job that continues to add to the chronic pain that you're dealing with as well?
I think so.
One thing you haven't talked about yet, and I only know this because we're friends, but well, you said it today, your job might be obsolete very soon, actually. And you've already went back to school. So, I mean, that's one more thing that you could be like, oh shit, I'm going to lose my job. And poor me, maybe it's time to go on ODSP. Maybe it's time to just, throw in the towel. But you're always looking to better yourself.
And you're right. And I mean, I'm 35 years old, and I mean, part of me says I can't believe it took me till I was 35 to get my act together, and part of me is like, I've got my act together. I am back in school part time. I took this semester off because people would be crazy to go to school when it's 100 degrees out. But I went to school partly because I wanted to, partly because work was encouraging me to. And ultimately, I want more schooling because I really would either like to transition into some sort of media, doing what we're doing tonight, like podcasting, radio, whatever, or I want to work in government in some capacity because although I know that my job could be cut at any time being a government worker, that there's that chance that I could be a guy that works for the government for 30 years and have a great pension, have wonderful pay. Like, it's just, I felt that it was a no-brainer to go back to school because there's infinite possibilities. Once I have a piece of paper saying he's not an incompetent dumbass, he's actually rather competent because he sat through four classes that were 14 weeks long and took 2 years out of his life when he could have just gone home and drank his face off. Hey, listen, I'm not going to profess to being perfect, and I'm not going to profess to understand or know that I've got everything under control, because that's the furthest from the truth, because the struggle is real. But I'm just doing something that I think I saw my parents do every single day while I was growing up, and that's to provide a better opportunity, I mean, for myself, because I don't have that responsibility of being a parent at the moment, but I'm trying to provide myself a better opportunity for my future.
I was going to jump in there, guys, Andy, and sorry not to cut you off. You're killing it for me, Brett, because you're speaking to my heart as someone who has literally never settled and not trying to, but I think complacency is just killing. And that's a bad word to say, killing people these days, but complacency, apathy, call it what you will. There's too much complacency, too much contentment in our society, where people either think they can do no better or think that they have peaked and they won't get any better, so they stop trying. And you know, I mean, it is what it is. I don't want to get too deeply philosophical here, but I'm a vocation guy. I'm not a career guy. I'm one of these guys that thinks that there is a plan for everyone in their job. And I'm not saying that you know, someone's plan isn't to work in a factory for 30 years. I mean, I'm a product of a single income home my whole life. Dad was a steel worker for 32 years, providing for his family because the pay was good and the benefits were even better. And he had equipment to buy for two special needs kids, right? But what I love is that you are realizing that your passion is in sports, in media, and perhaps even in government. And you're taking those steps to pursue whatever might be next, as opposed to, I've got a job. Even if it doesn't disappear in a year, I've got a job, I'm contributing, I'll just keep doing what I'm doing, right? Never settling, never being complacent. I think that's killer.
Well, here's the thing. I like to talk. I know my shit when it comes to a lot of topics.
Some more than others.
Yeah, some more than others. Sometimes I talk straight out of my ass, and I will.
You're talking out your ass. If you could sound like you know what you're talking about, it's a real good skill. You know what I mean? I mean, that's what politicians do, isn't it?
So, Brett, we've walked through a day in the Brett world. I used the term "walk" on purpose because you don't like when I do that. So,
see what you did there.
Give us one little nugget to finish off tonight.
First of all, Andy, I'm really, really, really glad you said that.
Gosh, Brett Wills.
But it's going to sound cliche. And, you know, people are going to be really pissed off hearing this. But I have two pieces of advice. Like, first of all, never give up. And I strongly believe that the only disability in life is a bad attitude.
Listen, you could say that that's cliche, and you're 100% right in that people will hear you on your little cliche diatribe and immediately switch that off because they don't see the other side of it. But if I'm believing those words from anybody, Brett Wills, it's you. Because when you say never give up, you've been open, honest, raw, and transparent over the fact that you were literally sitting at death's door with depression and anxiety. And yet you're here today to talk about it. So if I'm believing anybody when they say those words, it's not John Cena, it's Brett Wills. First of all, thank you, Brett, again for continuing to not only be a part of this journey with us, but for continuing to be exactly who you are with zero excuses. I love it, man. And that's part of, as Andy mentioned earlier, I just wanted to get you on as a friend because I thought you had a hell of a story to tell. I don't think either of us, Andy and I, had sort of projected or seen you becoming as vital a part of this production as you have, but I wouldn't have it any other way, man. Your honesty, transparency, and raw outlook has really added to what we are trying to do. So thanks very much, man.
Guys, I had fun tonight. I'm absolutely exhausted, but after we're done here, I'm gonna go crack open a beer, hang out with a buddy of mine that's actually been waiting outside my house for the last 25 minutes.
And, 25 minutes outside your house. Yeah. Hurry up, finish that damn podcast. That's amazing.
Actually, he just texted me and told me that he's listening to the one we just
did. The most recent one online. Yeah, very cool, man. That's awesome. Another fan of the show. All right, so tonight's episode, whatever time you're listening to this, has kind of taken a serious sort of spin in that we let Brett just be raw and honest and real. But of course, we always try to bring things back to those offside moments to close the show with. I think Andy's got this one. So what is the offside moment for this week, Andy?
There's a heritage park that's fairly close to Hamilton. It's about a half-hour drive. And last week they were advertising that they were doing an ice cream festival, which I like to eat. And one of the biggest reasons I always joke, anyways, one of the biggest reasons I work out is because I like to eat so much. So, anyways, ice cream is very much at the top of that list. And beyond that, Maya, finding things to do with Maya that is not the typical everyday. We were just looking for something to do with Maya, and so we took a drive out to this festival, and so it's a heritage park, and everything's set like 100 years ago, whatever it is, I don't know, it's at least 100 years ago. So I've been a few times in my wheelchair, out of my wheelchair, and I know what to expect there, but accessibility is not on the top of my list there, obviously, right? So we're parking, and the attendant sees me get my wheelchair out of the car, hop in the wheelchair, and he makes the point to come over and say, "Sir, you're actually going to really appreciate this, but 90% of the grounds are accessible, and that includes the washrooms and the main area, obviously, but beyond that, 90% of the buildings are accessible. And as I said, I've been there before, so there are buildings you can get into with your wheelchair, but I didn't think it was anywhere close to 90%. And we met another couple there, and my one buddy heard the attendant say this, and he kind of looked at me, and as we went around, we were kind of taking inventory of everything, all the buildings, and we just kind of pegged them off, like, nope, not accessible, not accessible. And it got to a point where I was like, I don't know where he came up with 90%, but it was just, it wasn't even close to 90. So, anyways, Chad, have you been out to Westfield?
No, never.
Oh, you never been there?
No.
So beyond the lack of accessibility, you should probably check it out.
Yeah, well, I'll find that same guy and question his math. You know, we've already talked about on previous episodes that I'm not very good at math, but yeah, clearly it wasn't 90. Okay, so let's throw it back to you then, Andy. Of what you saw, did you see the entire grounds? Like, what if you had to ballpark a percentage, what would you say?
Well, I'd say it was probably closer to 35 to 40, but I think what he
accessible
meant.
Accessible or not accessible?
35 to 40 accessible. So not.
Wow. From 90 to 35.
So let me unwrap this a little bit. So it's just, all it is the basics. It's the basic setup of a, I don't know, 1900s town. So there's like general store, bakery, everything you'd have. There's a train station, all that stuff. They have basically one of everything you'd have in a town, right? But going around each building is like a walkway. So yes, 100%, you can wheel up onto that walkway and go to the entrance of each building. But each building has a step, at least one step to get up into it. So
here's the ramp to a step.
Yeah.
It's kind of like stairs to an elevator.
Yeah. So again, this is my assumption, but he was basing his 90% on the fact that I could get my wheelchair onto the ramp and then look at the buildings from the outside.
We are 90% accessible if that means you can stare in the doorway. All right, well, there it is. Apparently 90 equals 40 in this week's offside. I think it's fair to say that we're going to let Brett slide out and get to his company, who has now been waiting 35 minutes for him. Hopefully that company is enjoying the previous episodes, and you can go back and check out all those previous episodes. Again, Brett, I want to take some time to literally just say thank you for this week, for your raw and unbridled honesty, as always. Thanks, man.
Thank you, guys. Enjoy your week, and looking forward to next week already.